You just need to taste some blood.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, editor, and with me is social media editor Dan Walker. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Fresh off the Scrappy Badger gravel race. It was a muddy day out there this weekend.
Oh yeah, the trails, the gravel got a bit soaked beforehand.
It's raining the day before. I found myself at one point through axle deep in a bog. I had to pull my bike out with a excellent squelching noise.
Ah, as if you got your rubber boots stuck in there.
Exactly.
There was suction.
And you know, the irony is, the day before we were talking about how nobody ever finds quicksand or gets stuck in quicksand. And I didn't. But it felt like I could have been in quicksand there if I didn't alleviate my situation very quickly.
Well, I'm glad you made it out safely and could be here today, that you weren't stuck in the woods or in a quicksand pit. We have a really good interview with Kevin Field. You probably remember the feature that ran in a recent issue by writer Dan Dakin on Kevin Field. We called him Moneyball, Mr. Moneyball of Canadian cycling, because of what he does with data and what he accomplishes.
Is Brad Pitt also going to be in a movie about Kevin Field?
We are discussing that. No, we're not discussing that, but wouldn't that be cool?
Who plays Kevin Field in the real life CBC feature film?
Oh, it's a CBC film. Probably. I don't know, but that'd be pretty awesome because Kevin Field has had a long, interesting career. We touch on that a little bit, but really we get into a bit of nerdy numbers.
Nice.
And we also look ahead to Yorkshire because he will be there with Team Canada at the Road World Championships. So we get into that, and what is back this episode?
That'd be full send, no send.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that and whatever hot topics we have.
So it's a full send on that?
Full send on that? Always a full send on full send. Have you ever gone to an event, maybe a cyclocross race, and just shown up and the gun went and you raced? No warm up?
Yes.
And how did that go?
Not well.
Okay.
Not well. Yeah. I flatted during my brief pre-ride, and then I spent a good 15 minutes trying to fix that.
So you you barely had a warm-up.
I pedaled, flatted, got to the line just in time.
Nice. I've shown up almost just as the gun went, and I've raced, and oddly enough, that race was okay, but I do not want to make that mistake this weekend. Look at this, Masters Riders. I have registered in advance.
Whoa.
Yes, I did not wait till the night before or the night of the cutoff to register for a Sunday race. I did it maybe 4 days in advance. I'm feeling very proud of myself. This is a PSA. Support the people who do races by letting them know you're interested well in advance. It helps them plan.
Got the car rented and everything?
Yes. I've booked the car share.
Nice.
Everything's on point. So I hope I continue to be on point with an opener.
Ooh.
This is where this is going. Coach Peter Glassford is back to discuss openers, not just for your cross races, but you know, maybe something like a Scrappy Badger, like you were in a scrap there with the Badger.
With the Badger? If you've ever seen a Scrappy Badger video, doesn't go well for anybody in a fight with the Scrappy Badger.
Well, you prevailed over the Scrappy Badger puddle.
Did Bernardino prevail with that guy on the stage? Yes.
Yes. That badger did.
Yeah. He's maybe the scrappiest of the badgers.
Possibly, but we are going to leave that for someone else to decide. Now we are going to look at numbers and the world championships. The 2018 Road Cycling World Championships were pretty great for Canada. Michael Woods had a thrilling race, taking bronze, a feat not done by a Canuck since Steve Bauer in 1984. Junior rider Simone Bollard got bronze in the junior women's race. Canada finished the 9 days of championship competition ranked fourth out of all the competing nations. Not bad, eh? While it was the athletes who got things done on the roads of Austria, it was Kevin Field, Cycling Canada's head of performance strategy, who was largely responsible for setting up this country's successes. Canada's no cycling powerhouse. Field works with fewer resources than most of the top countries at the World Championships. Compared with the top 15 nations at the 2018 Worlds, Canada had the smallest road budget. The Canadian Federation spends less than 2% of its performance budget on road cycling. Because of Field's use of data in cycling and the successes that have come out of that, we called him the Moneyball of Canadian cycling in a feature in the August-September issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine. I spoke with Field recently to find out more about how he uses data and what he thinks is in store for Canada at the 2019 Road Cycling World Championships in Yorkshire. In 2012, what cycling potential did you see in Michael Woods, who was at the time a runner with a busted foot who'd been riding a bike for maybe a year?
That's a really good question. So, of course, when we did the interview and the article and all that, I actually can't remember exactly when Mike and I sat down and had that big conversation about what he needed to do and what it would look like. But in 2012, I'd obviously heard about Mike from people locally in Ottawa about how awesome he was. And we'd met previously, but in 2012, the thing that really, really kind of brought Mike forward to my attention was Swain Tuft. So, because that year Swain and Mike had ridden together on the national team at the Tour de Beauce. So I wasn't even at Beauce that year. So I was with Spider Tech, and during the Tour de Beauce, I was in Europe doing the Tour of Switzerland. But what was really cool to hear from Swain, Swain was very, very excited about how good Mike could be. We had a conversation afterward, at Nationals, right? Because I came home from the Tour of Switzerland, and then we went into Nationals, and I was talking to Swain there, and he said, Mike's the real deal. We have to do something with this guy. So that's what really, really made me sort of start to really pay attention to Mike, was that endorsement from Swain.
I find that almost catches me off guard, because in the article you referenced, we talk about how, or Dan Dakin, the writer of the article in the August-September issue of Canadian Cycling Magazine, calls you Mr. Moneyball of cycling in Canada. And that evokes the Michael Lewis book about Billy Bean, who is the general manager of the Oakland Athletics, who, did a lot with data and not a lot of budget to build his team. And yet this is a very classic word of mouth reference.
Yeah, but that's where the article and the reality kind of sometimes get jumbled up. It's true that I do an enormous amount of data crunching and I look at data, but at that time he wasn't even racing yet at a level where the data was coming through. So this was pre-data. So then with Mike, so Swain said, hey, this guy is awesome, or potentially awesome. And then, I had that chat with Mike, we started doing things, and then the data started coming in. Like as soon as Mike started racing at the, more at a UCI level, and we were seeing what was happening and taking a look at stuff, it happened really fast. But yeah, the catalyst for me to get excited about Mike was definitely that conversation with Swain.
Why did you advise Michael Woods to get 100 UCI points to help him build his career? I'm thinking, why not tell him win a North American stage race like Redlands or Tour of Gila?
So that's the Moneyball stuff, right? So basically, if you go back and you kind of run all the statistics and you look at, you know, okay, who are the guys that are going pro? What does it actually take? And what do you need to see happening? And I say, and it wasn't just 100 points. What I say to guys is you need to do three things. You need to have an outstanding performance, like a really big result, something that's going to make people, you know, go wow and start to look and take notice. And that can be, you know, winning a stage in Utah or Colorado or winning a stage in California previously, doing something big in front of in a big game, you know. But just one big performance isn't enough. You need to show that there's consistency behind the one big performance. And that's why I say you got to score 100 points. So you have to show that you can function consistently in UCI level racing. And then the third thing you need is you need connections. So these days, nobody goes to the World Tour without some kind of person advocating for them. That's sort of a trusted person that can talk to a team director or a team manager and say, yeah, this is what's really going on with this guy, you know? So those are the three things. And the thing is, the number is different. You know, so if you're a European kid racing predominantly in Europe, that number is double. It's like 220 points. But the pathway for North Americans is like, we just have less races. So you can really stand out on 100 points. It's kind of the real benchmark. But it increases the older you get, you know, so you have to do it really young and really early. But it's really just, it's the quantitative measure of that performance consistency or that ability to be really stable and continuously deliver.
Where did those figures come from, like 100 points for a North American and much higher for a European?
Basically, every year I just look at all the young guys who are going pro, getting signed up into Pro Continental and World Tour teams, and I just kind of, I build a list of whatever it is, you know, 20 guys, 30 guys, 40 guys. And in that list, I look at things like their podium rate, their top 10 rate, number of race days they're doing, number of points they're getting. And you just average all that stuff up. And that's what the average says.
Do you keep these numbers on spreadsheets or have you built your own relational database?
I wish I'd built a relational database. That's kind of like a ongoing project. I'm actually working on to do something very much like that, and I won't say too much about it. But right now it's really just a spreadsheet because it's very basic data, right? So it's super basic information. Like it's easy to just put it in every year.
So then, are we not at the point where baseball and Moneyball got to, or is that now possibly with, so baseball has the sabermetrics, very advanced statistics. Have you developed, or are you in the midst of developing cycling's sabermetrics?
you could say that. It's not good. It's cycling statistics aren't nearly as complex as baseball statistics. So the math is actually pretty simple and pretty easy. But yeah, there's definitely other statistics that I look at and things that I try to compile. And I'm always building new ones where I'm like, okay, if we look at the data this way, will it tell us something different? So I'm definitely always working on that.
You've been directing teams for, I think, almost roughly 20 years, including outfits such as Jet Fuel, Symmetrix, SpiderTech, Optum, which is now Rally UHC. When did you start looking at numbers, and what were those first numbers you started looking at?
I started really looking at the numbers in, gosh, when was it? It would have been 2004, 2003, maybe, when I found the website cqranking.com, which was a super comprehensive website and database with all of the UCI results. And that website was created in the Netherlands by a bunch of guys because the UCI changes their point scales all the time. Like every few years, you know, the number of points you get for, you know, winning a class two or a stage or an HC or this or that, it changes all the time. So there wasn't consistency in the longitudinal data for riders performing in UCI races, and also the race classifications are changing. You know, like they're like back in those days, we had up to like 0.5s, you know. So they created CQ ranking honestly to kind of feed betting systems in the Netherlands, but it just became this really robust data set of road racing results. And I would use it all the time to understand things I needed to know to do just competitor analysis. So if you're going into a race somewhere and you don't know the riders personally, like you, they're just not top of mind, I would use it to sit, look at all the teams, you know, research their riders and figure out who the best guys in the race were. So I started back then, like 2003, 2004. And then it was really using it a lot in the Symmetrics days. So we used to do things like so at that point in time, you know, smartphones were starting to get better, and you could actually do some stuff in the car with the phone. But really what we would do, like Kevin Cunningham was awesome and a bit of, and you know, he was as much of a super fan as anything. So he would be following the races as much as he could while we were racing, no matter where we were. And he could do a lot of the research on CQ ranking almost in real time, you know. So as the breakaways were forming, we didn't know who some of the Latin guys were in the race. Like Kev could run those, like he could do really, really quick research. He could look guys up and tell me what was going on with them, you know, so we could understand a little bit more about their capabilities in real time.
You're a bit ahead of the curve, I would say, because it seems recently there's NTT, which is put sensors on everybody in the Tour de France since about 2015. And also, I think Pro Cycling Stats might be the new number one de facto stats and data resource on pro cyclists. Do you use either of those websites or services?
Well, now I definitely use Pro Cycling Stats the most. They've got some cool features, and I like the interface, and I find it easier to navigate and move around compared to CQ ranking. I don't use the other one just because I find I can get most of what I need out of Pro Cycling Stats and CQ ranking. But the Pro Cycling Stats, like I really, really like it now. And I've worked with them in the past to doing other things, you know, where you can actually get, you can subscribe to their API services and get that data, which is awesome. And then once you get that data, you can pull it out and, or you can put it into, like if you just want to use a spreadsheet with pivot tables or stuff like that, you can do that. But you can also dump it into more robust analytic packages like SPSS and do some interesting things with it. But yeah, I use Pro Cycling Stats the most now. The only thing about Pro Cycling Stats that I would say, as much as I love it and I love the guys that are behind the website, it has some bad data if you go back in time. So if I need to go back really far and look at stuff, I'll still go back and look at CQ ranking.
There's also not a lot of data on you in Pro Cycling Stats. I checked it out. I think it only has 2 years of your racing and only two entries. So,
yeah, well, I didn't really race. So my racing was kind of done, like when both of those sites were starting, you know, like, yeah, so there's probably, and I mean, I didn't do a lot of racing. And I wasn't good at that level, you know, so you probably see a couple of DNFs in both, like that might be the extent of it.
It's not extensive. So I don't know, maybe you want to go in and fill that out, get your own personal data up to speed.
No, I don't really care.
Can Canada do better at this year's World Championships in Yorkshire than last year?
Yes, I thought it was actually totally possible. We've definitely had some bad luck on the women's side recently, like just not recently, but through the whole season, you know. So we've had like just a lot of just bad luck and injuries and things not going as well as they could have for a lot of our most promising women's riders.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking recently of Leah Kirchman's season-ending knee injury.
Yeah, for sure. That's the most obvious example of that. Because Leah was having, by all accounts, her best season ever. And, she was going really, really well for the upcoming world. So not having her there is definitely a big, it's a big hit. But we have we have great women still, you know, like Allison Jackson, Sarah Poitevin, Caroline Canuel are all amazing athletes. And I believe we can do really well with them. So there's like, we've definitely had, you know, some misfortune that is going to lower the probabilities that we could have had with our elite women. But I think we're working on some ideas about how we respond and adjust and adapt to that. And I'm still really confident in what they can all do. So Yorkshire is a bit of a crossover course between a climbing course and a classics course, where the amount of elevation and how it's distributed is going to be interesting. You know, it's going to be similar to an Amstel Gold race or maybe a hybrid between Amstel Gold and Liège. So it's still very much a course where a guy like Mike can do well, but it's a course where other guys can do well too, you know. So you're going to have more guys in the conversation in a race like that. So you're going to have guys like Peter Sagan, for sure, can still be potentially really, really threatening on that race, and Greg Van Avermaet, etc. So there's the dynamics of the tactics and the strategy and how the race will play out is going to be more complicated than Austria, which was pretty straightforward. On the men's side, the challenge is that crossover course type, and it opens up the contenders to a range of different players. So it's going to be a more difficult race to stay on top of and really understand. However, like what we're doing now on the men's side that's really changed things for us again too is like we've got our quotas back up to six. So when you have six guys, you're now in the game. You can play the team game against the countries that have eight. You can use your resources differently. You can create more scenarios and you can respond to things better. As opposed to when you just have three or four, where you can't make mistakes, you know? So I'm really optimistic about that. And then there's another metric that I look at. So I look at a player quality score that's one of the things that I've built. And if you look at where we're at now with elite men versus where we have been in recent years, we have quadrupled our top player quality scores in the last 4 years across our elite men's category. And so we're now actually really comparable to even the best nations in the world. So we've got really good guys, really, really good guys. And with six guys and our top guys being that good now, like we have real options. So it's going to be hard. Like it's going to be really, really hard. But our guys are good and they're underrated.
That sounds like quite the improvement. Do you want to make any predictions for Yorkshire?
I haven't had a chance to really look at. Well, I guess the one thing I can say is I don't think anything sort of race defining significant is going to happen in the 180 kilometers of the remote start when we start in Leeds and we kind of go through the countryside and we come back to Harrogate to the circuits. I really think racing is going to play out on the circuits in the city over the last few laps. And I think the pattern of the race will be actually pretty similar to what we saw in Richmond, Virginia, where there's going to be a series of moves that happen after 210 kilometers that will really set up the final. But I think it'll be a pretty late move that will happen on the final circuits that will be the race winning move.
So we shouldn't put too much stock in the more remote and I think higher climbs than the lumpy circuit, which comes at the towards the end of the races.
They're awesome climbs. Unfortunately, they're just too far from the finish. Now that can all change. Like, so the things that can change that are like wind and weather, you know. So and that's just like, you know, again, like everybody thought Doha and Qatar was going to be like a big sprinter race for John Degenkolb and Marcel Kittel and Greipel and yada yada, and it ended up definitely being it was won by sprinters, you know, with Sagan, Boonen, and Cavendish in the top three. But the way the race played out was nothing like a bunch sprint, you know. So, and everybody knew going into, so like a lot of people were looking at it and saying, oh, it's going to be a bunch sprint, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. But when the teams and the nations and the riders came together, everybody knew there was going to be a critical corner. I can't remember if it was 90 or 120 kilometers into the course, and it was out on that remote area, and the shit was going to hit the fan, and the race was going to blow apart. And that's exactly what happened, you know? So that's all to say, like, even though a course on paper might look like a certain type, the weather can change the predicted pattern. So in Yorkshire, if it gets cold and rainy and windy, it could change what will happen in that first part of the race for sure. You know, best example of that would be like if you go back and you look at the 2015 Montreal GP. So, you know, Montreal and Quebec are definitely races that have a pretty typical pattern of how they play out. But in 2015, it wasn't even that cold, but it was cooler and rainy, and the race just opened up from the gun and it never let off. And it turned into a bloodbath. And that can happen when the weather's bad for sure.
Kevin Field, thank you very much for your time and good luck in Yorkshire.
Thanks a lot, Matt. It was a pleasure.
Kevin Field is the head of performance strategy at Cycling Canada, the sport's national federation. He'll be directing Canadian cyclists at the 2019 Road Cycling World Championships in Yorkshire, England, from September 22nd to 29th.
Matthew, are you ready? We have 5 minutes on the clock.
For full send, no send.
Start your speaking.
Okay, some non-debatable full send, no sends. Full send the Grand Prix Cycliste that just happened in Montreal and Quebec.
Hundo.
Full send Team Canada. Full send Nick Zukowski with his KOM in Montreal.
What an effort. On that last climb with the peloton chasing him, he dug deep.
Yeah, and he's had a great season. He's off to Worlds. Full send off Svein Tuft, last races.
Mm-hmm.
But full send on Magali Rochette's...
The fullest send
on Magali Rochette's performance at Jingle Cross. You watched it?
Oh, yeah. Man, I don't want to say I never thought it would happen, but it just... There's something about, you know, the Canadians performing on the world stage. You're just like, oh, it couldn't be us. You know, there's this, like, weird humility or, like... self-deprecation, but it was just so awesome to see her pull it off. Like, she didn't go out and lead from start to finish. She had her crashes, she had her comebacks, people caught up to her.
Mm-hmm.
It's the full glass phone case of emotions.
That's right. The trophy case of emotions. Yeah. It was nerve-wracking to watch. I actually saw it the day after. Mm-hmm. I queued it up on the TV, you know, for the family Sunday breakfast. And I didn't tell them how it would play out. So
but you knew.
I knew. Yeah. But my, even though I knew, like the when she went rear derailleur over tea kettle in the sand pit the first go, I was like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, did everyone else flat? Like, how did she come back from this?
Yeah, and then she rode so well on that twisty descent. Mm-hmm. When she was running up Mount Crumpet, she just seemed to have an extra gear. And that, so Megalee's World Cup win at Jingle Cross in Iowa was just, I don't know. She's emotional. I'm watching it getting a little emotional. I'm like, I'm supposed to be the objective journalist.
Really
here.
Cool was the amount of people's daughters I saw like on Instagram or other social networks watching that and how much that meant to them to see someone from where we come from doing something on the world stage.
Oh, is Megalee Rochette the Andreescu of cyclocross?
I don't know. Has Drake reached out to her yet? I don't think she got the use of the jet.
Okay. Yeah. Drake, could you please reach out to Megalee Rochette?
But yeah, just on the more, like a more serious note, it just shows how you put the women's racing on TV. Like it's usually in cyclocross's case over the last 2 years, better racing than the men's. Mm-hmm. It's more exciting, but you just you can see how much it means to people to be able to watch that. And these characters are, if not more interesting and more open than the men, like equal to them in those ways. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, full send on like on the UCI showcasing that.
Yeah, that was a fantastic race. And I'm just excited for the rest of her season. I hope it continues to go well.
Definitely.
All right, Over, you have something.
All right, I have a, maybe it's like a full send question. Why is it a full send on dropping out of road races and not gravel races? Why is the attitude different?
Okay, that is a good question. Because is it that road races, like once you're off the back, it's just like,
why am I here?
Why am I here? I'm riding a road either by myself. Is the gravel make it more interesting? Because you're, maybe even if you're alone,
Maybe there's more something more engaging about it.
Yeah.
But the pack dynamics play out similarly in gravel races. Like if you lose that front pack, like you're not catching back on.
Right.
Right. And you know, maybe more groups coalesce after, but why do we have such a different attitude about gravel than we have about road?
I'm going to also throw fondos into the mix because I've been in fondos where I've like hung on to a group, fallen off, then found another group and fallen off. And I, you know, I'm at a fondo. I'm just going to ride the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes alone, sometimes maybe not alone. I never think of quitting. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's something you put that word race in there and then all of a sudden we have like a different perspective, even though fondos are often just as much, if not more races than
more racier more
than racing. An O Cup, you know, but
that is I don't know how to conclude on this. Like definitely full send on finishing.
Yeah.
We always applaud that. And it's not like a pro race where, you know, there's no point in finishing your 1 day race once your time is done because you're holding up the team bus. I don't know what to make of that.
No, it's a question I was pondering as I dropped off the back of the front group
on the weekend.
It's like, why would I never consider dropping out of this? But if I'm out of a road race, I'm like, yeah, see ya.
Oh, look at that. Time's up. Full send, no send. You just need to taste blood. That's what Coach Peter Glassford says in our chat about openers. It sounds a bit gruesome, I know, but don't worry. An opener gets you ready for an event, maybe a cyclocross race, a time trial, a mountain bike race, or even a big ride. Glassford has tips for getting ready for your big efforts on your bike so you can perform at your best. Peter Glassford, I have a question, and it is, I think it's a simple one, but it's an important one. What is an opener?
Yeah, it's sort of a phrase that you see maybe more in cross, actually, but people will do some form of this in pretty much every discipline, right? So it's sort of that pre-race day workout. You'll see people sometimes put that in there as part of their warm-up too. They'll describe sort of openers being in their warm-up, and it's really just trying to make sure your body, and I think even more so your mind, are ready just for the exertion and coordination and activation required for racing, right? So someone described, this is very old school sort of description, but like you just need to taste some blood or taste blood, right? Wow. So that's like the goal in the warm-up, the goal in the pre-race day is just not to be so far away from the intensity that you've sort of like forgotten or gotten even stale, right? Sometimes you'll see that description of fitness. Like if we just did nothing all week into a race, a lot of times you're just mentally, you just haven't tasted blood. It's sort of gory, but, you know, you just haven't felt that intensity. You haven't felt how hard that cyclocross race start is going to be, or mountain bike race start, right? So I always think about the warm-up. I think about these openers, the pre-race day workout, as just trying to like be familiar with that speed and intensity required. So typical, like what you'll see, I just use 3 to 5 by 45 seconds, you know, and people, this will vary slightly. It could be 30 seconds. It could be 60 seconds. You'll see difference, but to me, it's just feeling that sort of start effort. Some people will do, you know, some 30-30. So something like a 5 minutes where you go 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. Some people will like gradually ramp up, to sort of a race pace. So they'll sort of do like 3 minutes easy, 3 minutes a little harder, 3 minutes a little harder, 3 minutes a little harder, and then just sort of sit at race pace for 3 minutes and then cool down. And it sort of depends a bit on the person and what the training was like beforehand, and then, you know, their preference and the race certainly that they're doing.
I want to clarify just a bit on the timing. Sure. So this is the day before, if it's say a cyclocross race, or can it be the, you know, hour before?
It could certainly be very similar, right? Like we'll see in time trial often, I'll have people do a pretty similar, like sort of just rehearse your warm up. And it is sort of like a lot of times we'll just do the same. So that's 45 seconds type thing, right? Cause you're just really trying to get activated, get the heart rate up, get warm. So it's really however you prefer to do that. And it's going to have you again, ready for that race start. I remember way back hearing for mountain bike start, you just want to get that first crappy feeling one out of the way, right? So where you feel your legs just like burning. So that's really as simple as it needs to be. Like you just need to feel a bit of that burn, get your breath going, feel like you're like in that race start, and then you just sort of can shut it down, right? So in cross, you know, that might be on the race course. You sort of inspect, get your lines, and then you might use, again, if we use 45 seconds, there's nothing special about 45 seconds. But you maybe feel a few of the sections at speed, right? So it might be a big run up effort you got to do. And maybe that's like one sort of hard into it, hard out of it. And maybe there's like a couple corners that you can sort of go through really quick. But then there's other sections that you're already going fast enough, just barely pedaling into it, right? So you don't really need to use energy there. And mountain biking could be similar. Sometimes we'll do like a full lap mountain biking. It's sometimes different, but more and more you're seeing sort of like that more interval-based sort of strategy just to try and reduce some of the fatigue.
Should I be worried during these hard efforts that I'm possibly burning a match, as the old cliche goes, I'm burning a match ahead of the race? Am I using up some of my very limited reserves that I should be saving for the event itself?
Yeah, it's interesting. You'll hear that for sure. So in general, you'll see that like the warm up is performance enhancing, right? So the body gets warm and the cost of that effort is lower than if like you haven't sort of got the body, the blood's flowing, you know, we have all this like hormonal cascade that's sort of making us, you know, burn our fuel and get ready. If you just go from like zero, then your body's not really warm and ready. So the rationale would be that your body's going to be more efficient at that first effort. The other piece that we come back to is that if I get that question, I'm usually like, well, are you not warming up for your interval workouts and your rides that we're doing, right? Like usually there's some sort of like, you know, 3 by 30 second sort of spin ups or some sort of, you know, it might just be these 45 second ones, as the warm up for something like a 3 by 10 threshold. So, if there's any nervousness about that, it's usually, we just need to make sure that we're preparing and making, you know, I really like that analogy of sort of the workouts should, you know, start seeming like they're like the race, right? And so trying to rehearse that race day thing so that you are familiar and confident that, like, yeah, I can do those 45 second efforts and still be ready for the start.
Is there a difference between an intense sort of race and the opener you need to do, like cross, time trial, mountain bike, versus an opener you might do for a more endurance focused event?
Right. Yeah. I sort of differentiate, you know, there's sort of your crits, you know, mountain bike, maybe you differentiate a bit even to short track sort of stuff. So sort of you're like under an hour, call it. And then you maybe have like an hour to 3 hours, and then you have like over 3 hours. Most of your races that are longer are not going to start like a cyclocross race, right? So as an example, you know, we're at a mountain bike stage race, and, you know, I would spin around it, and mostly it's just to make sure my gears are working, you know, tires seem good, suspension's good, nothing's happened to the bike. You know, and just, again, a little bit of coordination, maybe do a couple corners and stuff just so that I feel like I'm, you know, at one with my bicycle. But you don't really need to be super warmed up, because you're probably going to pedal for half an hour in a group, you know, and it's not going to be such a big deal. And when we get into those longer rides, your previous question about sort of the, do I have enough energy to finish the day, is actually a reasonable thing, right? Because some of us are going to run into like just a strict like energy, like we're limited more by our energy output. You know, the energy we can put out in that day versus in a cyclocross race, like it's a big sort of amount of energy, but all at once. So that's more sort of like an intensity, sort of just like, are you there at the start of the race, or are you just like dropped in the first couple minutes, right? So we need to be ready for that race to go with it, versus an endurance race, usually like the key moments are like hours into it. I don't know if that makes sense, but we, the mm-hmm. moments we're getting. So I guess that's another way to look at the openers, look at the warm up is, when is the critical moment? And that could differ for the athlete, and then certainly differs for the race, right? But thinking like, what are we actually preparing for? So cyclocross, the start's critical. Mm-hmm. Endurance race, you can usually just sit in the pack for half an hour, however long, right?
Right. And then the critical moment is later. And then you could almost say the in a road race, maybe, or a gravel, long gravel event, the first hour is your opener. Is that fair?
Well, your warm up in that case, right? Now you still might do what I've had like people at Kansa and stuff do the day before the openers might be, you know, we go out again. A lot of it to me is that making sure all the gear is good. You know, there's no straps have broken on our packs. Our pack isn't leaking. And tires are holding air. And then they usually will do like something a bit more specific, right? So cyclocross, mountain bike, you know, those 45 seconds, like pretty full gas, call it 9 out of 10, right? You're getting your heart rate up towards that race average, maybe is a way you could think about that, towards your threshold. For gravel, I try and think more, maybe more, especially if someone's been conditioned pretty well, we maybe do like 3x5, just sort of rolling that sort of tempo-y sweet spot, sort of middle ground. And that would be probably close to their quote unquote race pace, right? And just sort of something that's not for those athletes, if they've prepared, like they're used to doing like hours up at this moderate load, right? So 3x5 is just going to be like nothing. Mm. But it just, again, they're tasting the, I don't want to use the blood analogy, but they're tasting the intensity that they're going to feel, right? They're just like setting into that rhythm, because you're going to just do that for like hours, right? Just sit there burning along at that moderate pace. And that's the name of the game in those races, right? So it's a little different as far as the demands.
Right. I think instead of tasting the blood, we should go with maybe sipping the lactic. It just sounds...
Well, and certainly could, if you want to get, I am not a physiologist, but you certainly get into some what they call VO2 kinetics and sort of, yeah, definitely just priming the system a bit. And that's, you know, maybe a bit more with the warm up and sort of even different spins. But I think there's good logic to that for sure. Just keeping that in the system so the body knows what to do, right?
Peter, thank you very much.
Awesome.
Peter Glassford is a professional coach and head of Smart Athlete Coaching Services. Send in your Ask a Coach questions for Peter to podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. And that's the episode. It's put together by me, Matthew Piorl, and Dan Walker. We had help from Terry McCall and Philippe Tremblay. It's produced by Adam Killick. He also composed the music. Thanks also to Ontario Creates for its support. Dan, if people want to know more about what we do here at Canadian Cycling, where can they go?
should head over to this website called cyclingmagazine.ca.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, there we got all the latest news, some tech tips, gear reviews, some fun columns as well. Mm-hmm. There you can also find all the links to our social. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, not TikTok. And then we are constantly putting out new stuff, so go check it out. And if you are going to tell anybody about the podcast, please tell them to download and subscribe, rate and review, but only if it's 5 stars.
Yes. Please, and please say something nice too. Yeah. That helps a lot. Usually this is the part of the end of the show where we tell you to thank somebody, but I want to just thank Dan Walker. I want to thank Dan Walker because this is a full send-off to Dan Walker. He is moving on to other projects, cycling-related ones. And yes, thank you, Dan. You were here at the beginning of this podcast. You've helped set the tone. You are the man behind Full Send, No Send. So this is a full send-off to you. I'm gonna miss having you crack me up on mic all the time. But you know what I'm not going to miss? I'm not going to miss you cramming into my shoes to use the trainer downstairs because you don't want to change the pedals.
Well, the obvious solution would have been to just use Shimano's. That would have been way easier.
You're right, but correct. I had a reason to have that set up.
Thank you. And it's been really fun on the pod, and I've loved where we've gone with it over the last year and a bit. So I'll be listening.
You'll be listening, and who knows? You know, as friend of the pod, we may hear your dulcet tones again.
I hope so.
All right, thanks everybody. Talk to you later.